The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Oh, what? Oh, what? What? Missed ya.
I missed you.
No.
No?
No.
Not acceptable.
This is not okay.
Who allowed you to be this beautiful?
Who allowed you to be this beautiful?
Who allowed you to take my breath away?
Let's go to Nick's party.
Are you kidding? No. No way.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
Yes, he broke art rules. Name a person who broke a real rule.
Rosa Parks.
Name another.
Susan B. Anthony.
God damn it.
Welcome to The Contenders, a show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we're talking about 2019's new classic, Booksmart.
Booksmart!
Yay!
Yay! Yay!
Tobin, did you see this film in the theater? This film is currently in the theater, folks. That's why I laughed.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. No, I did. I think more people should pay for this movie.
I agree.
Because there's been all this controversy over whether it has, whether it's made enough money or not, and whether what that says about the genre and films led by women and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when this becomes available for you to purchase in some form or rent in some form, I encourage you all to vote with your dollars and throw some change at this movie.
Agree. I intend to do just that.
Yeah, as do I. As do I.
Which in the meantime, Tobin. Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us some history, please.
All right. So there was sort of a long history of this movie from script stage to getting to the screen. The two writers, Emily Halpern and Sarah Haskins, who I think we followed on like Twitter and YouTube long ago.
On my way here, I was thinking, and on my way here, I mean to the room where I podcast.
Yes, this day.
Yeah. But I was in the car earlier.
Kitchen so to study.
On my way here. Sarah Haskins is someone who, yes, I have known of, you know, since 2009. Actually, I think it was more like 2008. But there was a show called Infomania.
Right, right.
On Current? That, yeah. I don't know if it was ever on TV or if it was all web-based, but I got it via web. And it's all this whole group of folks doing social commentary news, mm-hmm. including Sarah Haskins, who does great. She would do great takedowns of gender essentialist commercials.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
like the I sent you the Doofy Dad one.
Yeah.
All the dads in commercials are, yeah. Or, you know, Yogurt for Women or whatever else. She did that great. And then Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi, who have mm-hmm. a popular podcast, Throwing Shade, but Aaron Gibson, who's an Emmy award-winning producer of Gay of Thrones, and her book, Feminasty, came out this year and is a painful delight. But she was on that show. I showed some of his bits. He had
You showed his bits?
I showed his bits. He had a segment called That's Gay. But the title card would say, that's gay. And talked about various pop culture things and where we see heteronormativity and homophobia but then also like profiting off of, you know, rainbow stuff. It was all good. Long story short, I apologize, folks. Go to YouTube and look up Infomania and look up, Sarah Haskins and Lady Business, and, yeah, so I was so excited to see her in the credits because I've watched her a little bit, but I haven't been paying enough attention. And this reminded me like, oh, I should have paid more attention. And good for her. That's awesome. So,
yes, she's one of the first people I followed on Twitter back in 2010 or whatever, when I was partly because I'm sure you introduced me to her and I I remember sort of loving everything that I saw. And so she still pops up in my Twitter feed, and I've sort of lost track of her beyond that. But I, you know, I that name comes up. I'm like, I know that name. Oh, right. That person's, I follow that person on Twitter. So Emily Halpern and Sarah Haskins write a spec script in 2009 that gets on the blacklist, which is this list of annual list of unproduced, the best unproduced scripts floating around Hollywood. And that version had to do with these two overachieving friends who are trying to get their boyfriends to go to prom. And that was sort of the idea, but, and it, you know, gained traction and, but didn't ever get made in that form. A few years later, Susanna Fogel, who at some point we'll talk about more, she directed The Spy Who Dumped Me and has written a bunch of other things. She did a pass that really fundamentally changed the story, made the Amy character gay, and changed the goal from getting their boyfriends to go to prom to hooking up with each of their crushes who were suddenly single at the end of the year at the final party of the year. And then Olivia Wilde gets hired and Katie Silberman is brought in and another writer is brought in. So if you're counting, we're on our fourth credited female screenwriter came in to do a pass. And that's where they sort of turned the movie into the form that it is today with sort of Olivia Wilde's sort of direction. Olivia Wilde is the director of this movie. And then the last thing is that this been the other bit is that it's been reported a lot in the press that that our the two main actors, Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein, became best friends in order to play best friends. And it had to do with Olivia Wilde suggesting that they live together during pre-production before they made the movie. And then during the production, she wanted them to as she says, there's a quote I have here, it says they needed to spend enough time together where they were no longer sort of charmed by the newness of a friendship. Which I thought was a really smart and savvy thing to do to get them past. It's not just that they would have good chemistry or that they were like, it's that they've been best friends for so long that they are, you know, there's no new sparkle to it. It's right. They've seen it all together. They've been in the trenches together. And I think that really comes through. So those are my two bits. Aislinn, take us through, please, the wonderful, fantastic and full list of women in charge, women in, involved in major roles in Booksmart, please.
Would love to. And then after that, I do have a question for you regarding some of these folks. Depending on where you are in your day and in your life, I encourage you to make a drinking game out of me attempting to say all these names. All right, here is the robust list of ladies in charge. First, director Olivia Wilde. Writers, Emily Halpern, Sarah Haskins, Susanna Fogel, and Katie Silberman. Producers, Chelsea Barnard, Jessica Ebaum, Megan Ellison, Nancy Kerhofer, Jillian Longnecker, and Katie Silberman. Actors, Caitlin Dever, Beanie Feldstein, Jessica Williams, Lisa Kudrow,
yay,
Victoria Ruska, Diana Silvers, Molly Gordon, and Billy Lord.
Yay. Well done. Well done.
What a list.
What a list.
Speaking of wanting to be friends with people, how much fun. When I saw, we'll get into it. When I saw Lisa Kudrow and Will Forte, yes, I lost my mind. They were so good. Before we get too far away from this list, though, you alluded to this growing list of writers, and then I named them all. In sometimes I hear jokes about too many writers,
mm-hmm,
right? When Charlie's Angels 17 had 25 writers, that's a bad thing.
Right.
In this case, is it different because of the time? Is it different because they are women? Which we can't answer that question. But, you know, how do you interpret this growing list of writers?
That's interesting. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on how you feel the movie comes together because of it. I wonder how much of it has to do with the fact that they're women. I think that may have something to do with it. Not in terms of like, oh, women are more collaborative or blah, blah, blah. But there's something about, there are a certain number of writers in Hollywood who get brought in to rewrite a whole bunch of things. That's kind of the thing that they do. And they're very often dudes who come in and like, well, this is what I would do. And they're pitch some kind of big take on it, which is fine. Like, that's a skill they have. And that's, you know, fine. My understanding in reading the, I read a couple of articles and interviews with Olivia Wilde that the various drafts that these writers did, they were often very, it may just be these particular writers, but they were very, what's the word I'm looking for? Faithful to the original idea of the story, which is that it was going to be about these two overachieving high school seniors, you know, right before, near the end of their senior year, who decide to sort of make up for lost time. And that wanting to sort of honor that was important to each of those writers in turn. And so that they were doing is just sort of reorienting the script a little bit, or, you know, making it fit. They brought on Katie Silverman because she, you know, in 2019 or 2018, when they're getting ready to make the movie, they wanted it to feel like today, not like 2009. You know, life was different in 2009 for teenagers in a lot of ways. And so that I thought that was a really so this seems like a very smart way to do it. But you're right. There is a assumption.
Sort of a trope.
If you have a bunch of writers on a movie, it's probably because something's fundamentally wrong and they've just sort of tried to paper over it. But it does seem to me like this was more everybody trying to find a way to make the movie what it wanted to be in the first place.
Nice. Excellent. Thank you for answering my question. Okay, let's tell the people what this movie is about so we can talk about it.
Okay, so this comes from NPR.
So are you going to use your NPR voice?
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, okay. Booksmart tells the story of two star students headed to the Ivy League. For years, Molly and Amy have put academics first. But the night before graduation, they realize that the kids who partied also got into good schools. Worried that they've missed out, the two friends decide to cram 4 years of high school partying into one night.
Yay! Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Aislinn, you hated this movie, right?
Oh, God, the worst thing I've ever seen. So at some point I stopped taking notes.
Me too.
Because I was just having so much fun.
Me too.
But a couple things that, one that hit me right away, and then one that I voiced about halfway through, and I think it speaks to that thing Olivia Wilde was going for, and I think got successfully, was the friendship of these two young people. And I just said out loud and then wrote down, there is just nothing like female friendship. Like, there just isn't. And maybe that's why everyone hates us so much. But to make light of all kinds of things going on. But, you know, you see it in that first scene when they're Amy comes to pick Molly up. But then when they first get dressed for the party and their whole little bit back and forth about how great they look.
Right.
And then when they're in Jessica Williams' car and they change again. And that's when I said it out loud, because it kept coming up and it doesn't get old for me. And I know with friends that I have, and I would say maybe especially ones that I don't see often, but then when I do see, and we're just right back into that rhythm of what are the bits that we do and what are the things that, what are the stories we always tell and what are the ways that we always communicate with each other? It's just so, like, those paths are so well trod and deep and, like, remain so. And not with everyone, right? We grow and change and not everyone's a lifetime friend and blah, blah, blah. But there is something about female friendship that I think cannot be replicated in other ways. And I am sorry if that is not equitable, but I just kind of think it's true. So I don't know. How do you react to that statement?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. As you say that, I have wonderful friendships, but I am envious of the kind of friendship these two have. Plus, most of my best friends are women and always have been, right? And I which is obviously different, right? That's going to be a different kind of dynamic. But the way that they were so, the first moment I noticed it is when she comes to pick her up and they do the dance, right?
Yeah.
Like, And they just will go into these things, these bits, as you say, without having to announce them. Like, they both know, oh, we're doing the bit now, and they do the bit, and you're like, oh, they've done this bit a million times, and I can begin to guess the first time they did it and how it maybe has changed over time. And there's a vulnerability that they have with one another, but not an earned vulnerability, and they will pick each other up at every opportunity. And I did experience envy of that of that relationship watching this movie, for sure.
The other thing that early on hit me that I was, because okay, let me backtrack a little. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I had heard from, you know, people high and low, left and right, everywhere, that this was really, really good and I really needed to see it. I was like, okay, I'm on board. I will go. But I hadn't read a lot about it. And in one sort of sentence version, or when you read kind of just the part of they're going to cram all their partying into one night,
right?
It sounded to me a lot like The To-Do List.
Right.
Which, what is her name? I mean, Aubrey Plaza is the lead in that, but it was, I want to say, written and directed by, I'm sorry, Bill Hader's ex-wife, but what is her name? I'll look it up.
Okay, look it up.
Pardon me, I didn't do all my homeworks. The To-Do List from 2013.
It feels older than that.
Maggie Carey. Woo. So, The To-Do List from 2013. Written and directed by Maggie Carey, that I liked aspects of, but it's very different tonally and you know, goal wise, and that's like explicitly sexual goals, if you will. It's a super nerd who wants to do all the be generous with her sexuality in a way she'd never been in high school.
Right.
Before she gets to college. So it's a different, but in my mind, I was like, oh, is this just another one of those?
Well, it's pitched that way. This is super bad for girls, quote unquote, is their
also
pitch.
Also then super bad, which is funny. You've got Beanie Bernstein, who is Jonah Hill's sister.
Right.
So it's, in some ways, I would argue that this is a much better version of Superbad.
Oh yeah, agreed.
In a lot of ways. But that's not, sorry. No. Much ado.
Yeah.
What I noticed early on and I really loved was there was a great show don't tell kind of thing around their feminism, which I loved. So in the first scene you just see, it's like panning around Molly's bedroom and you see all of her posters and all the things. It's a very kind of Leslie Knope sort of backdrop of all these amazing and important women. And then it sounds like Maya Rudolph is the voice. I don't know if it is,
it
but
totally
of the
sounded
motivational
that way.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then you have Amy has patches on her jacket and all the bumper stickers on her car and all that. And there are two things I loved about the way they were just set up in their friendship and their values and what's important, you know, to them individually and as a group. And one was that they were showing a lot more than they were telling.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't like, well, we do this because we are feminists or whatever.
Because
while I do say that from time to time because of my job, I would say most people don't. And then the second part was there are aspects of that that were funny and that were extra and that were eye-rolly, but it wasn't because of who they are.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the joke wasn't, oh, these feminists that can't have any fun.
Right.
It was that they were maybe being a little extra in there. And I, again, apologies to my students who listen, working with people about this age, there's a lot of presentation of self that is very important, right? That I'm going to wear my t-shirt and I'm going to bring this issue up in every conversation I have and I'm going to whatever. And so there are aspects of that that are extra, if you will. And so I like how that also felt pretty lived in. You know, this is the last week of senior year. All these young people know each other and they know each other's shtick, right? And not just for the two main characters. I felt that for the others that we sort of get to know as well.
Right.
But so that's... that it was in within the first two scenes that I was like, okay, this is a different movie
right.
than what I was afraid it might be.
Right, right, right.
And I loved that.
And fundamentally so much more about their relationship than any other relationships that they have in the movie, which I thought was mm-hmm. wonderful. And the you remind me of another thing, the other thing that happens at the end of senior years, wherever, high school, college, like whatever, is that the kind of the more rigid cliques start to break down a little bit because you're coming to the end, I think. B, so it matters a little bit less. B, you know each other so well. I mean, you've all been in this in classes. You know, you'll have the, you know, the stoner kids with the, in our case, with the, you know, the hicks, the like the cowboys, the you know the AP yeah. kids, the whatever, the all the band kids, the theater kids. That by the time you're at that senior year, you all know each other enough. Like it felt like those walls were kind of dissolving a little bit within these, mm-hmm. which opened up then all kinds of opportunities for people and for, in this case, characters in this movie. But I really got a very sort of tactile sense of that in this movie. Like it felt like they understood senior year and thought about what that last week is like more than mm-hmm. like, oh, we're just doing parties and you're in this group right. and I'm in that group. I thought that was really cool.
I agree. I mean, there's nothing. Well, that's not true. There are certainly things, but there's not a lot in this movie that I'm going to disagree on. It is about their friendship, and you know, at some point they're going to have it out in a way they haven't previously.
Right.
And like, you know, you can kind of feel that's what it's going to be. But another clue that I think that this is, again, something different and it's about them versus these other people is that I didn't know who like Molly's crush was mm-hmm, until mm-hmm. like halfway through the movie.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Like it wasn't entirely, you know, we had met this. Is it Nick? Is that the vice president? We'd met this person and heard that he was very charming, but he hadn't spoken.
Right.
You know, it was all a sort of voiceover montage-y sort of thing. But right. we had met the kid with the car, and we had met you know, the guys in the bathroom who were being mean. Like there were different options around, mm-hmm. but I didn't know until she was really like, no, we have to go to this party that,
right.
and I kind of liked that too, that it wasn't here I am and here are my goals and here's the boy I like. I don't
right,
know.
Right,
I like
right,
that.
Right.
The bathroom scene reminds me though. And then I'll let you talk again.
No, good.
But, another thing that like really, I was like, oh man, not only is this going to be really good and different than I thought it was, mm-hmm. but also it scratched an itch for me in that when I believe it's lunchtime, is that first day, we're setting things up still. Molly goes to the restroom, makes a point of going to the all-gender restroom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which, again, they don't make a whole – like the jokes they're making about it are not about having an all-gender restroom.
Right, right.
Right? I mean, it's just right. – it's to that second level, which I – again, kind of working in a field where this is discussed a lot, that's where I would have gone to, right? Never would I make a joke about having an all-gender bathroom, but I might make a joke about that's where everyone goes to poo. Like,
exactly.
I don't know
exactly
what the jokes would be. Welcome to take that out if you want.
Heck no.
But so Molly's in the restroom, and then these kids that we've heard about through Molly and Amy mm-hmm. as slackers, as generous with her sexuality, as whatever else, come in. And that's where Molly learns that they're also going to really good schools or have really great opportunities.
Right.
And then because I'm trying to explain why I think this is so fantastic. Well, the itch it scratches for me is that I am constantly trying to check myself mm-hmm. in that, am I trying to achieve something or trying to get something done or trying to be successful because that's what I need to do. And that's what is going to be the best for my situation or for the goal I'm trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Or is it am I worried that someone else is going to do it first, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I feel like the things that pop up in your life and the things you point out to other people are the things you need to work on, which is why I first frame it as an issue of mine. Mm-hmm. But because I didn't really clock it in the first scene when the Maya Rudolph voiceover is saying, "You're better than everyone else. Screw everyone else."
Right,
I didn't,
right.
Really, I knew it was a subversive self-help kind of thing, but I didn't really clock it until that moment where she's just so boldly like, but no, I did the right thing. You did the wrong thing. I should get this benefit. You shouldn't.
Right, right, right.
That I was like, oh, this is what she's got to figure out.
Right,
is
right.
That it's not about anybody else.
Right.
It's just about what, not that you can't, you know. The world has to be about other people, but in terms of why you, the entitlement and the, mm-hmm. The sort of Venn diagram of it all. And so that, like I say, scratch an itch for me of like, that is someone who has to learn that lesson hard, but also this makes it again, a very different movie. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Totally. That there's a different, it's coming of age in a more kind of sophisticated and in some ways realistic way, in terms of it's not just about the external, you know, boxes you need to check of a coming of age thing. It's about sort of giving up some of the sort of preconceptions that you have had since childhood, in this case about sort of whatever your idea of a meritocracy is or whatever, that like mm-hmm. you have that maybe have blinded you to other experiences and to other people, and that you are, even though you are a person who does think a lot about other people, you're not thinking about the people around you as people necessarily, or as not as people in the same way, right? You
right.
make assumptions about them, and which is another thing that has to at some point crumble as you grow up, hopefully. that you begin to meet people as they are, as opposed to as the way you assume them to be, and value them as people on their own rather than vis-a-vis your own experience. And I think you're right. I think that's totally smart. That's totally smart. The other interesting thing too, is that they get some jokes out of, how to say that, they get some humor out of, I guess not out of Amy's sexuality, but her sort of like the joke with Lisa Kudrow and Will Forte, that they are just as tossed off line, that they have a Jesus thing, or what do they say? We get the idea that they're very religious,
yeah,
but very accepting, and they're working hard at it. Right. But the joke,
yes,
when they're in the room seems to be more about like the parents who can't quite let go of or still assume that their kids are kids as opposed to like
right.
becoming adults on their own. And then Molly's kind of loving the idea that they think that Amy and Molly are a couple, and then sort of, which got a lot of
yes.
play in the trailer. And it also made me think, okay, this is going to be a lot of what this movie's about. And it's really not. That's
right.
has to do with that particular set of relationships as opposed to the rest of the movie.
Right. And I agree. And it's clear that Molly, it's a joke for Molly. You know, like
right,
Amy
right.
doesn't particularly like the joke, but she's not like, she's got bigger fish to fry. And so it's not that, yeah, it is a joke for Molly, not a joke for the audience a little bit, which
yeah,
I think
right,
helps it
right.
to come off as funny. The parents thing. So I do have two, what I would consider, okay, I have 2.5 legitimate criticisms that are things that come up in movies like this, but also just in movies that bother me every time.
Yeah, okay, good.
And one of them, so you mentioned the parents not being able to let go.
Yeah.
And I get that, and that I think that is probably true. This is also the night before graduation.
Right, right.
Of course you're supposed to have dinner with your parents. it's graduate, like, I don't know, but so there's that thing of like, it's the last day of school and there are parties on the last day of school, which is also the day before graduation. Like that whole timeline, I have never met a human for whom that timeline is correct. But so please tweet at me if you had a last day of school and then a giant party and then graduated the next day.
Okay.
And that leads to then the end,
uh-huh.
but that like that those parents wouldn't be at the airport.
That I really did notice that. I really
like
noticed
that. And particularly
yeah, yeah.
those parents.
Yeah.
So, and for the movie, it was perfect. So, you know, I'm going to let it go, but it is that kind of, but you are adults, but you're not, like, you're just graduating high school. Like, give your parents a break.
I had a fix for that, which is that the parents could have been in the car right behind.
Absolutely. And you know? I assumed, yes.
Or mm-hmm. all in the same car in some, like, there would have been a way, I think, to include them in that and make that. We'll have to talk off mic about graduation and end of high school and all that, because I feel like I had a kind of different experience about that. But we'll save that.
The all night party is after graduation.
Right. No. I know. Yeah. Yep. No, you're right.
Okay. We'll talk later.
That's how it was for us. a citywide all night party. Right. I mean, this was.
Yes, that's true.
All the kids in all the schools in the UC at the university,
yes,
in the town where we grew up.
I hear you. I just feel like likely you've got grandparents in town. You've got, I don't know. Maybe it's a sign that I am old, and I just I empathized with the parents.
Oh, Will, it's heartbreaking
planning a thing.
When Will Forte is going through how he's named all of the, he's punned all of the food, yes, they've made for dinner on their, or her sort of ending this chapter of life.
You can't sit and eat and then go to a party? Damn.
Yep.
Anyway,
no, it's true.
We can move
it's
on
true.
Past that.
It's true.
Would you like to know the other thing that bothered
I
me
do.
And that might get us deeper into it?
Yeah.
I think you know this about me. I have intense discomfort around the drugging of other people,
yes,
or the accidental getting high.
Yes. Yes.
That is construction.
Yep.
I hate it. I hate it. There is one TV program in which I will allow it. But like that's you and
is
I
it on
have,
CBS.
No, you and I know because I'm old. You and I have, well, I've not had it out, but we had a long discussion, you know, when we first rented The Hangover way back about this. Uh-huh. I was refusing to watch it based on my understanding of the premise that someone had drugged someone else and that's why it all happened.
Uh-huh.
And I still maintain that that's not how you would act the next day after being drugged in that way. Mm-hmm. But. Or how you would act that night in any case here. I didn't like it. That being said, the amount of time that we spent on it, I felt like that was appropriate.
Uh-huh.
And then the collective, what do you call it? Hallucination.
Yes.
I did find humorous. And then when we were done with it, we were done with it. So
yes. Right.
I would have preferred a version without it or with something else, but mm-hmm. for a drugging, I don't know, because I think because everything else I liked so much, I'm sort of like, okay, I'll give that to you. How did you feel about it, that or any of the party hijinks really?
Yeah, it felt as the spirit of the movie is very generous, and so it made me generous in that moment as well. I could you could sort of see it coming. I did love the part where they turn into Barbie dolls, this hallucination,
yeah,
that you allude to, which turns out to be something that was never in the original scripts. It was something that Olivia Wilde brought as part of her pitch to direct the movie. She's like, at this point, they're going to turn into Barbie dolls. And what if these two overachieving, you know, women turn into Barbie dolls? How are they going to react? And that it is kind of interesting that you do learn something about them. Like Molly reacts in a way that I would expect her to, and Amy reacts in a way I would not expect her to. But then it sort of makes total sense in the course of the movie and in her sort of, you know, her. We wouldn't say unrequited passions or her sort of, you know, she's out, but she has not had a lot of experience. And mm-hmm. so there's something, you know, there's interesting if you're suddenly in a body that's not your body, that's a different body. And I don't know, I thought it was felt very true to who she was. And so at that point, I kind of like on purpose forgot where it came from, like how they got into that, because I liked what they discovered in that moment, which is, I think, if you're going to have a movie that is playing in some of the same super bad-ish territory where you're going to go outside the bounds of, okay, the parents aren't in a lot of it, and there's going to be these sort of on purpose druggings of people and for sort of comic effect, that if you are at least using that to learn about a character, I think that I don't think that was wise. The Jared character, can we talk about the Jared character for a minute?
Jared, is he the chauffeur?
Yeah, he's the rich kid who is having the party on the boat.
Yes. Oh, Jared.
Who is, as with so many of these characters, is played both for sort of laughs and sort of pathos later. Like, you know, you're asked to feel a character who seems much, much larger than life, right? Like, he does not seem to be even necessarily like a human being, more like a caricature. And then they sort of try and bend him into a real person. And I did feel a little bit like I felt some of that was a little forced. I think that so Jared is a character who's, you know, invites them, who's going to drive them to the party that they're trying to get to, the big Nick's party, the party where Molly's crush is. They're going to drive to this party. And instead he takes them to his party, which is on this big boat. It's like catered and it's like cruise ship thing, right? Except nobody's there except Billy Lord. What's Billy Lord's character's name?
Gigi.
Except for Gigi.
I think the word you're looking for there is yacht.
Yacht. Thank you.
As our landlocked children that we were.
Yes.
One of those big boats.
It's a big boat. It's a great big boat. A yacht. Thank you. And so there's catering staff, like it's fully done party, thumping music, whatever, but no other kids except for Gigi and him. And so throughout the night, throughout the movie, he is presented as a caricature. And then when they finally get to the Nick party, he ends up being there, and he and Molly have a little heart to heart. And he's, you know, he has this funny thing about how he can't wait to, nobody here understands him. He can't wait to get out and meet some people who share his quirks, which are, what is this, airplanes and
he wants to build planes and write design musicals. Airplanes.
He has,
or produce musicals.
Musicals, right. Right.
Yeah.
He wants to make enough money designing airplanes to produce original musicals because there are too many revivals, which is funny.
Yes.
But that didn't work it didn't land for me the way that some of the other characters did.
Yeah. That felt forced to me too, knowing that Beanie is a Broadway actor.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. You're cutting out on me, so I didn't know if you were reacting to me or not. I
had a drink.
Oh, how dare you? Yeah, I think I agree. There are moments. It's hard because I also, when talking about him, makes me want to talk about the Billy Lord character as well. Because
sure,
they're presented as a duo at the beginning. And then I may have missed some of the specifics about their relationship, other than they're just both the rich kids and she's, you know, needs a caretaker. I don't really know.
Rich misfits.
I think she was doing her best. Almost Famous Kate Hudson. If Kate Hudson and Almost Famous had money,
yes,
that's what she would be.
Good
and
call.
And you know, she was, it was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed seeing her there with him. I also felt there were some kind of moments that were false, but there was something about, okay. And this is also going to come out gendered in a way I don't like. But it's a discussion that my friend Penny and I had several times in college, which were, there are these larger than life personalities in your school. That in the real world, are they a big deal or not? Who knows? But there is someone, there's like that super, not even super popular, but like super thing. So for instance, in our high school, I'm thinking of Noah, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who is just a character, and everyone knows something about them, and you get the feeling that people have had experiences with them, or, you know, like they kind of make everyone feel special in some way. But that it's more than likely, or not more than likely, more often in our experiences, Penny and I felt that it was easier for boys and men to get to that plateau of, I don't know if it's notoriety or popularity or whatever. There were these characters were so often dudes, and we just were like, how come we can't be super cool? but so he felt like that part of it rang a little bit true for me, that he is quirky. He is kind of an enigma, shows up out of the blue and maybe with outrageous whatever. But that that is charismatic to people. And the way that the first time you see him, he comes in the classroom and then says, "See you, Molly," or whatever. Like, he always says something exactly to her in a strange way. That felt very true.
Yes,
and
true.
So when it comes back around and Molly has asked him to speak on her behalf at graduation because she's going to be late, like, the bookends of that relationship I really, really liked. Mm-hmm. I agree. Some of the middle was awkward. And I'm a sucker for feelings. And so, like, that he chartered this yacht and there's no one there.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah,
that just,
it does hurt. Yeah.
It hurts. So I like where we get with him in the end. And likely he's going to do it, I think. I mean, it just seems
right.
He's gonna take off a couple of accessories. He's gonna be an engineer, what have you, and then help put up some musical somewhere. I think and that would feel to a high school student probably like a really weird juxtaposition of interests. Mm-hmm. So he didn't stick out as much to me. I'm trying to think of who did. I mean, I guess I was a little bit with the Nick character. I couldn't figure out if he was different than how he was introduced to me, or if it was just that he was introduced to me through Molly and Amy's eyes and then didn't actually get to talk till the party because he did seem overly friendly and overly focused on Molly.
Yeah.
But it's also been a long time since I've been to a high school party, so maybe it wasn't out of the blue. But so it was more him, I think, that didn't, and he was great in it, and I did also turn to my left in my house and say, "God, I hope I don't have to awkwardly flirt at a party ever again. can I please be done with that? Because that is hard to watch, because Molly is working so hard. I can feel that energy of, okay, I need to be light and friendly and okay, but I need to, you know, engage him and maybe that's, you know, making fun of him or, you know what I mean? Like, I need to just, she's just calibrating constantly. And I felt that energy coming through.
No, I'm picking at small things because there's just nothing to not like, you know, there's so much to love in this movie. Like, this movie feels like a lot of high school movies, contemporary high school, especially these sort of recent, I think of The Edge of 17. Okay. And I'm thinking of which a movie that I really enjoyed. And I'm thinking of the scenes between her and Woody Harrelson as the teacher as being such a thing that, like, that's one of the things that has really stuck with me from that movie. And this feels like that. Like, a lot of characters have the kind of specificity of their relationship in Booksmart. Mm-hmm. And then in Edge of 17, movies like that, which are really good. I'm not knocking Edge of 17 by any means, but it feels like they're sort of we're laughing at the characters more. And there are a couple relationships that are as sort of beautifully drawn and get at something real compared to this movie where there are so many that have that feeling. You know, like, I'm not trying to pit the movies against each other, but something
that
feels different about this. About this movie to me.
And do not worry if there's anyone in this conversation who's going to critique Edge of 17, it is not Tobin. but that's a different podcast.
Yeah, different podcast.
So,
podcast.
You know,
yeah.
Donate to the Patreon and I'll tell you why it didn't work for me. Speaking of, then, okay, let's talk about teacher relationships.
Okay,
we have the poor principal.
Yes.
Or assistant principal? Principal.
I think he's principal.
His principal, played by Jason Statham, real quick, because he is from Kansas City and I went to grad school in Kansas. My best friend from grad school, Jose, and I went to a Second City show where Jason and Olivia Wilde were special guests. Because it was a benefit for something. And so and the part that I remember most is that, you know, it's the Second City traveling team, right? So if you picture, you know, 20, 25 years ago, little Tina Fey, little Rachel Dratch, So it's, you know, six young people, very energetic, all in black, basically, because they're, you know, creating a world.
Right.
And very, very talented. But, you know,
but work it, even working from the balcony, yeah,
they're working it. And then out comes Jason Sudeikis in this blue suit that is like tailored to an inch of its life. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's it. Yep. He's in a different plane now. He started there, and now he has a, you know, $3,000 suit on. And so he came up and did a couple games with them, and then brought Olivia up, and she did a couple games. And it was funny because he was throwing out hometown references. And so then she didn't know what they were. So then she was trying to, you know, she did great in terms of the improv. She did great, but you know, she was throwing the ball back, but it wouldn't quite be, you know. And so just add it anyway. So I've been a fan, in long story short, I've been a fan of both of them. And for her, it was harder for me to come by. I knew her first from House, and she was in kind of the second set of young doctors working with Dr. House. So it took me a minute. But Jason Sudeikis, I loved him in this. It was so sad.
Yeah.
And just so, yeah. And I think it was that thing of when you see a teacher or someone that you know from a very particular context outside that context, but it was that to the nth degree.
Right.
It wasn't just running into them at Albertsons. It was
all the hot tamale lights in the back of the car, of the Uber, the Lyft that he's driving. Yeah. Yeah.
But we know, because we're in the world today, and also because you and I grew up adjacent to public education,
indeed,
that many teachers have second jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And did things in the summer, or did things at night or whatever. So that was just, it was sad because of the truth that was in it. But then the, you know, the game, of course, is escalated because of this being a movie in the context of that. And the turning on the porn thing,
yes,
would have bothered me. Except that just like within the last year, someone sent to me a compilation of that kind of thing happening in real life.
Oh, really?
because of YouTube, Bluetooth speakers.
Oh, man.
Someone, you know, I was not me. This is not me. It's not me. Hypothetically. So I've had my phone hooked up to the stereo system by the pool for the afternoon. Mm-hmm. To bump some tunes. And then later I'm on my phone looking for some explicit entertainment.
Yes.
And then it connects again. And so the whole pool area
has the audio. You broadcast
Or then specifically, many of the examples were like Lyft and Uber drivers, or like a child gets in the car with their parents. And then the car picks up the kid's phone. In any case, that is a
real phenomenon.
Modern day.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a modern day social whoopsie, and so
modern day social whoopsie is our new band name.
Thank you. Had I not seen that, I would have been like, rolled my eyes at this ridiculous thing. But like, this ridiculous thing happens pretty regularly, according to this YouTube compilation. So that was great.
Well,
and then we had the other teacher, which was Jessica Williams.
Right. Which brings me to the other thing that I didn't care for as much in this movie.
Tell me.
I love Jessica Williams. I think she's wonderful. I think they handle her so well. Like, they use her persona and she does so well in the movie until they get to the point where they have her come in the party. And to me, that was like, oh, can we not say that? Do we have to say that every teacher is kind of lonely, sad sack, you know, like, could this be enough maybe for her? She's like, then everything after that felt a little kind of easy and not just not believable, although I didn't believe it, but also like an unfortunate thing to do to that character.
I agree. So that was my half. When I said there were two and a half things.
Yeah.
Because I loved her so much.
Right.
I agree. I would be okay with her being at the party for a minute if it was, you know, the girls wanted her to come with them to make an entrance. If something else had pulled her into the party and then she was sitting there and then Google dude hit on her.
Right.
That felt right for him.
Right.
but it did not feel right for her.
Right.
Based on what we had seen of her. And then it is just icky.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's icky. I don't care. You know, I don't care how old he is.
Right.
I mean, I do. It could have been ickier.
Yeah.
But, you know, age is absolutely a component, but also the power dynamic is another component. So, like, it's icky regardless of his what jurisdiction he's in.
Right. Right. And again, this
the idea that
they think she's so cool and she is, but then, oh, she's not cool. Don't be like her. Like, what? No, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to have a role model who isn't off designing rockets and or whatever. Like, we can have a role model who's teaching high school. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
People need to do that and do it well and be enough to not, you know, like, I don't know. I was several ways rubbed the wrong way by that moment. However, at the party, one of the things that I love about this movie is that Amy and Molly are shown to be good at the things at the party. Like, as everything else in the movie, or as everything else in their lives, like, they are achievers, they work at things, they do that. There's a great bit where they're going to, like, they go to the library to research where the party, like, you know, it's a great bit. So they get there and, like, guess what? Molly is really good at beer pong, you know, like, great. And then Amy ends up, like, initiating this hookup thing with this woman who, this young woman is, you know, who's like a peer of hers or whatever, that, like, they turn out to be. At the first half, like, it's not like, oh, they get there and they're the butt of all the jokes. People are happy to see them.
Right.
They're including them in things. They're, you know, it does not all go well, but it's not like they're, I think back to like the movies of the 80s where you would have the big party scene and the quote unquote nerds walk in and then it's like, oh, let's give them wedgies. And they're like, it's this whole other kind of thing. And I like that they had that experience and that they were shown to be, you know, that they could do these things too. Good. Look, it turns out you, as the premise of the movie is, you can party and have a life and enjoy yourself and also enjoy yourself while you're studying and achieving. You know, you can do both these things. These are not mutually exclusive. And I thought they handled that in a lot of ways well at the party. What'd you think of the party?
I agree with you, your statement, and then I would just add that I think it also speaks to what the audience with Molly and Amy are learning about all the other students, too. That the other students are not just the things that Molly and Amy perceived of them. That, you know, that they're not, it's not them against the world. It never has been. That was a construct they created that really they would have been included or would have been. People would have been excited to see them or even to embrace other sides of their personality, right?
Right.
That it's other people aren't. The joke is also not that the whole party is amazed that Molly can play beer pong.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah. Right.
So I think it helps with that some of the, you know, the rules that we make up for ourselves are just that.
Right.
They've made up all these rules about or all these ideas about who they are and who the other people are. So I agree. I like that. I was much more at ease at parts of the party than I thought I would be because I was sort of braced for that. Oh, what's going to happen? And I did laugh at the ongoing joke that Gigi just shows up everywhere.
Yes.
And like beats them places. For me, they did that just enough times that it was charming. And that's because that is a joke, then that's also a great way to get her into all those places because that's kind of the joke. I loved the pool
scene.
Right before Amy sees that her crush is
Ryan
making
and
out
Nick
with
are,
Molly's crush.
Yeah.
Ryan and Nick. Yeah. But, and I'm sure that this was, you know, spoon fed to me. I don't think I'm doing anything revolutionary other than just being there, but that, you know, it's a very freeing moment.
Yes.
That she's, you know, she's literally stripped down from someone else's clothes. So like that's kind of a layer there too.
Right. Good
but
call.
Then, and I'm going to move past people having their eyes open underwater. Cause in movies it's magically can happen, but being a contact wearer for as long as I was
100%. Yeah.
Like a boy. Not a good idea.
No. They've already turned into Barbie dolls
then
this
it's
night.
Just, that's true. You're right. Maybe, the superpowers from the drugs. there is something about it was all bodies, but it wasn't particularly objectifying for me. Mm-hmm. It was, but there was just, it was just kind of free. And there's something a little bit equalizing in that they're all underwater. They're all, I don't know, that's, it's kind of like a simplified version of social whatever. Mm-hmm. And the way that she acted that I thought was great too, that it was, I don't know, it wasn't just jumping in a pool. It was,
no, it was much more than that. Yeah. I love
and then
that
of
moment.
Course the, you know, tragic seeing your crush kissing someone else and that it's this other person's. And then then my next question was like, okay, well, how are they going to handle this?
Right.
Because a thing that bothers me in TV shows and movies is just like, tell the other person the thing.
Yeah.
Rather than making it a whole.
Right. Right.
Whatever.
Right.
But, in any case, what did you think about that part?
I love that. You've said it better than I could. So let's go move on to their, well, I don't know. Do you want to say anything about Amy hooking up with, what's her name? Her name was.
It doesn't happen till after, but
it doesn't? Oh, right. With Hope. Yeah. Okay.
Cause they fight and then she goes to the bathroom.
Right, okay, so let's talk about the fight then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think of the fight?
I mean, it hurts. You know, it's, once I understood that this movie was about them, I understood that there was going to be this moment that this friendship has to, there are things that are unsaid. And now that we're ticking down this time until their identities as best friends in high school are over.
Right. Which I don't think that they really fully grapple with, like they haven't really come to terms with early in the movie.
But I mean, but it's kind of just true. And then in a movie sense, very true. I mean, Superbad has a similar structure in that they have it out about who's lied about their future plans,
right,
and who's protecting each other and what does that mean? And, or Lady Bird has that type of not with a friend, but with the mother and daughter. And so, I mean, it's part of, you know, changing how I'm using my hands a lot. You can't see that, but whether their identities are going to change, their relationship's going to change. And they're both, you know, kind of digging their heels in a little bit to keep it from happening, but it's going to happen. So, mm-hmm. I liked that you heard some of it, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of like that. And then, it just seemed so true to what we know of their characters, the way that, you know, when Molly wanted to go to the party and she used the code word Malala for like,
yep,
you have to do what I say, or it's not that, but you know, like this is important.
Yeah, once a year, no questions asked. Yeah.
But when Amy does that back, it doesn't have the same weight.
Right.
And that felt to me very true of friendships in general. At one time or another, you know, somebody's going to pull some sort of rank, I think. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. And that felt true to Molly's character, that then she starts like explaining to her very best friend why she's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then like kind of the walls come down about kind of how they each see themselves and the other person in their relationship,
mm-hmm.
but then you don't hear it all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's true, because we don't know the depth of their friendship. And then it was just tragic to me that people were filming it.
Yeah.
Which of course is what would happen.
Yeah.
But like, that just hurt. And so I'm glad it didn't come up again.
Yeah.
Later. I don't think we needed it to come back in a video form, but,
yeah.
And I'm trying to think of other kind of specifics that were said. But it felt like the appropriate sort of culmination of all the things that we've seen from them. What did you think?
I thought it was beautifully acted. And they're both sort of uncorking a lot of stuff that they've sort of, that's been pent up. The other thing I want to say is that I thought it was really, really well directed. The whole movie, I think, is really well directed. Mm-hmm. There are maybe too many, people might say one objection people might have is that there is a lot of music cues. Like there's a lot of like cut to pop song and something happens. I think the songs are so well chosen so nicely set
and
to the moment.
And
it's a high school movie. So, you know, like back the fuck off. But I think that this moment was handled so beautifully, partly because it's all in one take. The camera is set up and it's on like a semicircular track and it's moving back and forth between them. So it's not holding either one of them. It's not favoring either character. This is not a thing where either character does not have, you know, they're both have, you know, valid things to say, and they're both right and they're both wrong. And so the camera's sort of just tracking back and forth between them. And not letting us out of the moment, right? If you something in that kind of scene, if you don't cut the to a different shot, if you hold it all in one take, we can't get a breath along with them, right? So we're in the moment with them, and then as they're doing that, the lighting in the background starts to fade a little bit, like literally they're turning down the lights in the background, and then you begin to see the people turning. You don't see it because they're out of focus, but they're other people turn to look, and then the phones come out. As you say, you see the lights on the phones as everybody starts to film them, and that's as the sound then comes out, as you say, which then I begin to think, okay, so now we're the voyeurs. Like, we are the same as the people over there who are filming it. Like, we're watching this for our entertainment, and it feels like a very private moment that they're having in this very public space, but they're not making a joke about that. It's just that we've hit this moment and here's where it is, and it's happening. And it's just between them. And that's for me, I think the beauty of the sort of technical beauty of pulling the sound out at that point is it feels like Olivia Wilde saying, okay, now we're going to give them this moment because we've seen enough of it. And it's not our place to sort of ogle this moment anymore. And I don't know that's necessarily consciously what she's thinking, but that's the effect that it had on me, which is such deep respect for these characters, what they're going through, that we're now going to give them the space to have this moment, even though the people around them aren't giving them that space. And that level of sort of respect for the humanity of the characters that you're directing, the story that you're telling, is just, that's like A+ level stuff. I mean, it's just so super impressive to me.
I mean, that is more than I got out of it. So that is why you make the big bucks.
I don't know about big bucks.
That is that is a sophisticated take, and I thank you for that.
So then we have
the hookup.
The hookup. What did you think of the hookup?
I mean, for Amy's character, I think that was it was set up that she was going to take a romantic chance, and from my perspective, and then Ryan was not available, and so she has that like, oh, but I need to take a chance. And
yeah,
I don't love it in that. I agree with Amy when she says to this person, like, why are you so mean? She's just that. And I thought so true when she said you're act like one of those people who says they're calling people on their shit, but really you're just being an asshole. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So for me, that transition wasn't quite what I wanted it to be, but I'm so glad that we had that, like fumbly first hookup, with two women that wasn't. Mm-hmm. What was that super explicit French movie?
Oh, Blue is the Warmest Color.
Blue is the Warmest Color. Yeah, that wasn't. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I have seen of that movie. That is the 7 minutes I've seen. So, not there's anything wrong with that. But I think for this being much more kind of like you say, fumbly and awkward and figuring things out, I think was great. It then made me flash to Superbad. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's just so often that we have that, but with a heterosexual couple. So
right.
I like that the only intimate scene we have is two young women. I think that's great. Representation is important. I'm here for it. Hate vomit.
Yeah, that's what I knew. I was like, oh.
Right.
Aisla just looked away from this screen.
Yeah, that is a fear. And then particularly in that kind of situation. And I'm not going to say anymore right now about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, y'all know who you are. That's all I'm going to say. So I liked it much better in that we have a kind of a reprise when that next morning. Mm-hmm. And I guess you're right. We do have the parents in the morning at breakfast. So maybe I'll let go of them at the airport. But is her name Hope?
Yeah.
When Hope comes in and talks with Amy, and then love that you have Molly in the window.
Yes.
Freaking out.
Yes.
That I loved. I felt like that I have been that character. They're like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm not going to listen by Melissa. And I'm not going to watch what I'm going to watch. I'm like, this is our lives happening. Yeah. So I thought that was just beautifully done. And that it was, you know, that Amy felt successful about that whole thing mm-hmm. in the end. Mm-hmm. Whether they see each other again, whether they talk again, that's that story you're going to take to that next thing, which is that orientation for whatever organization she's with the other handful of young people. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. might be what she talks about. Well, I just met this person. I don't know what's going to happen. Right. So that, I think that scene for me redeemed my discomfort with the vomiting scene. Mm-hmm.
The thought that I had as the second Hope or the last Hope scene, the one you're talking about the next morning happens as Hope comes to Amy's house, that there's a whole other version of the movie that follows Hope. That's like Hope's night from turning from like someone who is so defensive that she's cruel, right? That she's an asshole to other people, to sort of have it like, what did this moment mean to her that it's changed her a little bit in some way? And I, you know, it's really neat when you can feel that a movie has in mind the other characters' trajectories in a way that you can feel them before their scenes and after their scenes. And I thought the movie handled that all really well. So then in between this we have the Amy gets arrested, she's in jail,
right?
And then
they're talking through the thing, and they're just talking about, well, first Molly starts with a joke, but then they're immediately talking about like their lives more than they're talking about how their friend is in jail. Like then they're just two best friends on the phone. And that was amazing. Exactly. And I also feel that, right? You haven't seen someone forever. You pick them up from the airport. You have to figure out where you're going, what you're doing, but you're immediately then back into your friendship.
Right. Yeah.
That was a beautifully true. And I think not just in a teenage way or a teenage girl way. Mm-hmm. That's just friendship, I think.
Yeah, right. I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. but then they drive the car and they like come into graduation. I mean, it's go ahead.
Sorry, there's one thing I want to go back.
Okay.
Because we have the other female character. We talk about Annabelle that we don't know her name till the end because she's just called AAA.
Yes.
And she's one in the bathroom that confronts Molly because they're both going to Yale.
Right.
And
which Molly didn't know until that bathroom
Molly
scene.
Molly didn't know because this, you know, from Molly's perspective, this girl is just out there being trampy and couldn't possibly be smart or also be getting things done.
Right.
And she is cruel to Molly in that scene. I also don't know how cruel Molly, we don't know if Molly has been cruel to her in the past or not.
Right.
I get a sense that there's disdain there, but
and
we don't know this.
And
yes. Mm-hmm. We don't know the extent of it. But then the party is, the cops come to the party, people run away. It seems like what's set up is that Amy creates a diversion so that other people can get away.
Right.
Like this is also her brave moment. And then I love her ranting, getting into the cop car about her rights and the police, or is it incarceration rates? I mean, it's just
yes.
It's just on
and
brand.
She calls shotgun and says, "Oh, just kidding, I don't have one."
Like that's so good. So then Molly's walking home, and this character who we knew no AAA at that moment, but then her name is Annabelle, stops her, and in an earlier scene. Annabelle had said, you know, I'm going to pretend I don't know you next year or something that is pretty cruel.
Right.
But then in this scene, she says, please don't call me that next year.
Right.
And I'm getting emotional now just because that is so that, like you say, this movie cares about other people, the other characters' trajectories,
yeah,
and what's important to them, and that there are aspects of that identity that she wears, mm-hmm. it seems, with somewhat pride as she's pointing out her tiny shorts or whatever in the classroom. But there's parts of it that, you know, that she doesn't want to continue to wear in her next,
right.
The next part of her journey. And so that when she just says that, oh, that gets me. And then also she justifies, and not that she should have to, but she does sort of justify her sexuality, and that mm-hmm. this is what, you know, this is part of who she is. And she's like, what am I going to do in my own home?
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. And advocates for her own pleasure. Like,
yes.
And because I liked it. Like,
yeah,
you know, and that the thing she feels, the thing that hurts the most is, you know, she expects that guys are going to call her names that have to do with, you know, her sort of the deployment of her sexuality. But that the girls are doing it too. Right. That's what mm-hmm. hurts is that sort of. I don't know. I thought that moment was, that's one of those moments where you get the other side of a character that I thought was yep. really well handled in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And because I think for me, it was even that, yeah, it's not going to solve all the animosity they've had toward each other for a long time.
Right.
But at this point, they kind of both have taken pause and seem to have an agreement to move forward respecting each other as people, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and whether or not, and then in my head, I figured that, like, yeah, you know, they would run into each other a couple times, but really it'd be like their sophomore year. Uh-huh. They would have some sort of night, whether it started studying or they'd end up in the same class,
uh-huh.
and then kind of really get into it,
uh-huh.
and yeah. then have a friendship of some kind.
Totally. Totally.
As time went by, that right. they need to grow apart. Not that they were friends, but they, you know, they need to grow independently, yeah. and then maybe right. they can find those things that they had in common because they grew up together. So
right,
in
right.
my mind, eventually they have a, you know, everyone has a sophomore night.
Yeah, where, yeah.
You know, they rehash something.
They're in some seminar together with like only four other yeah. students or whatever. And mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
And I think, again, talking about me, and what really pushes my buttons are the way that this character seems to be the one that points out that Molly isn't like the 100% protagonist that she believes she is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. She's so self-righteous. So she's so, I'm doing things the right way and I'm going to be successful and y'all are going to be pumping my gas or whatever other kinds of
yeah, yeah.
things she says, you know, inclusive only to a, to where it impacts our life.
Right,
and,
right.
and Annabelle represents a very different route and is mm-hmm. that kind of mirror up to our protagonist that I think makes her feel differently, but also at different points has shown the audience that there's more than just her narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's a tough thing to have pointed out to you.
Yeah.
And totally. So it's, you know, from as a, just an audience watching the whole thing, I'm like, oh yeah, what are the moments where that has been pointed out to me or should have been pointed out
mm-hmm.
to me,
mm-hmm.
but then also for the movie that, you know, shows that Molly's way isn't for sure the only way and isn't necessarily the right way.
Right.
So that was, I thought that was kind of a brilliant, what do you call that? Oh, like a kind of a foil for Molly.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah.
Anyway. And then you're right. Then they come screaming in the wild car.
Jared's car. Yeah.
Jared's car into graduation. I mean, I think they have earned the silly.
Totally.
Slow-mo of the, you know, erratic driving.
Totally.
You know, I wouldn't have accepted it necessarily at the beginning, but at the end, okay. You
totally.
Know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They've totally earned it. Yeah. And I mean, yeah. again, they've been Barbie dolls. So like
right,
the movie's
heightened,
from then on, right? Like it's not all going to yes. be, quote, you know, it's going to be as real as it feels, you know, like high
sure.
school, we've talked before, high school, the adolescence is a time of heightened everything. And so
yep.
it feels that way, even if we know in retrospect, okay, maybe these things weren't quite as big a deal in the grand scheme
right.
of things. They certainly felt that way.
when they tell the story.
Yes, exactly. Right, right.
That's what it's going to, that's what it, you're right. That's what it feels like to them. So yeah, I accept it. I also, at that point, I felt I had a very, as they were, you know, coming in to graduation and then talking and panning through the crowd. I think this movie did a great job of making us feel familiar with this group of teens that, again, the movie is so much about these two, but I felt like, not nostalgic isn't the right word, but I felt, it felt so familiar to pan through the crowd and see all the people. We haven't really talked about the drama nerds.
No, and the murder mystery party, which, given the number that we had, we, you know.
And the karaoke. Yeah, the karaoke. And the critiquing of the karaoke.
Yes.
I'm not going to name names, but I heard those comments from your friends.
Yeah. I mean, we all know what party I would have been at, right? I mean, this is, there's no surprise.
Oh. Yeah. Yes. What party you would have been hosting for sure. And I would have been sneaking into.
Oh, we invited you.
Oh, thanks. But yeah, but so I hadn't, that surprised me. I hadn't expected to feel kind of nostalgic about the other teens.
Yeah,
but then in that graduation scene, I very much did. And I just loved it. I love this movie. I
love this movie.
I want to go watch it again.
I'm going to watch this movie again real soon.
Maybe when I am home in the summer, we can watch it together.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That'd be nice. Hey, Tobin.
Hey, Aislinn.
Do you have final comments?
No.
I forgot what else we were doing, but I do have a game. Oh, would you like to play a game?
I would love to play a game. How'd you know?
Okay. So, this film, as you know, is called Booksmart. Hmm? So, I have decided to test your book smarts.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I encourage folks to play along. Please keep in mind, all of my research was done on the internet yesterday. So if it's wrong, you know, tell me. But I'm not taking that on. Yeah. So I have a series of paired works of literature.
Okay.
Most of which from the 20th century. A couple, I just snuck in a couple 21st centuries in there.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the title, and if you would like the author and of each pair, and then you tell me which one is older.
Oh, okay.
So starting with Mrs. Dalloway versus Ulysses. Who's older?
Oh, Derek, I'm so sorry. I'm not going to get this right off the top of my head.
Oh, man. Yeah, we need Derek for this
Derek.
Game.
We need Derek, Derek. Here. Okay.
Derek, okay. Keep track of your points and tell us.
I'm going to say Ulysses is older.
Correct, sir.
Phew.
According to my research, Ulysses by James Joyce is 1922, and Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway was 1925.
Oh, man. So not by much, but a little bit. Okay.
Point for Tobin.
Okay. Phew.
All right. Next up, we have I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Okay.
Versus Valley of the Dolls.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings was earlier.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
Oh, man.
Valley of the Dolls. According to my research, Valley of the Dolls, 1966.
Okay.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, 1970.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Bummer.
No points awarded on that one. I'm so sorry.
All right.
Next up, The Remains of the Day versus 1984.
Okay. Now, do I tell my Remains of the Day story here?
Yes.
It's high school story, right? So
yeah.
Remains of the Day came out on VHS.
The movie,
Remains of the Day, came out on VHS. Emma Thompson and Anthony Hopkins comes out on my birthday when I'm a sophomore in high school. And so I say, hey, I'm going to have a party. We're going to watch Remains of the Day. And so we have a party, and then we all go upstairs and watch Remains of the Day. And I would say 85% of the group of 10 people fell asleep. If they had phones, they all would have been on their phones. It was just me watching Remains of the Day, and everybody else. It was like a complete, and I knew it as it was happening. I'm like, oh my God, this was a bad choice. But you know what? I really wanted to see this movie.
Yes, you do.
I do me. I'm going to say 1984 was written first.
You are correct. Oh, I thought you were going to ding. I thought that I was going to get you on that.
Did you not hear my ding?
Oh, I heard the second ding.
Oh.
If you dinged. I did. It was just a delayed ding. A
delayed ding. Ding delay. Okay.
I thought I was going to get you on that because The Remains of the Day is a period piece. The book wasn't written until 1989.
Yeah, the author is still writing books and is not terribly old, as opposed to 1984. George Orwell has been dead for a long time.
Sure. And so that, I guess I didn't take into account that you would have that much knowledge of the actual author. I thought you just knew the movie, and so I thought I could get you. But
Nope.
That's a little behind the scenes from me. Okay. Are you ready for another classic?
I am.
The Metamorphosis. Or Heart of Darkness. Boom.
Oh, man.
Who's older?
Oh, man. Okay.
Kafka or Conrad?
I was an English major in college, but I made a lot of movies instead of reading a lot of books. I'm going to say that the Metamorphosis is... No. Yes, Metamorphosis is older.
You are correct.
Oh. Total guess.
Metamorphosis, 1915. Heart of Darkness, 1922.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. That was skin of my teeth there. Yeah.
I had to include Heart of Darkness because for whatever reason, I read that for school four times.
Oh, wow.
Twice in high school and twice in college.
Wow.
It just kept coming.
I've read the first half of that book three times now.
Well, speaking of, seminal works in our biographies.
Okay.
The Old Man and the Sea.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Versus The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh.
Who's older?
Wow. I'm going to say...
wow. It's close. Not gonna
lie. I'm going to say Talented Mr. Ripley is older.
I'm sorry. Incorrect. Oh. Old Man and the Sea is 1952. Talented Mr. Ripley, 1955, according to the internet. Man.
Okay.
But you're still up. You've got 3 of 5 points. We've got two left. And then a tiebreaker, even though there's no second player. So next we have Carrie versus The Color Purple. Which is older?
Carrie's older.
You're right. 1974.
Yeah.
Versus 1982.
Yep.
Good work. Okay. The final in the... So that was... They were both films, right? I mean, many of these. Yeah. I picked many of these that were films.
And those were both films that were made close after they were written, which is how I guessed that it was first.
That you knew. Okay. So now we're going to move... Our last one is going to be TV related.
Ooh, okay.
American Gods or Sharp Objects? Which is older?
American Gods.
Ah, damn you. You're too good at this game.
That's because I read Sharp Objects as it came out. So.
That's true. Because you're a Gillian Flynn person.
From the beginning.
Okay. So the final, you, Tobin, have 5 out of 7 points.
Nice.
Would you like to do my... a bonus round just for fun.
Of course.
This is a literature-based marry, consensually smush, or kill with 3 important characters from history.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Marry, smush, kill.
Okay.
Jay Gatsby. Sherlock Holmes. Atticus Finch. And okay, listeners, please weigh in on this as well. Tell us your list.
Okay.
You can marry one. You have a sexual encounter consensually with another. And then the third, you kill.
You kill. Okay. So we've got, you said Jay Gatsby, Sherlock Holmes, and Atticus Finch.
Yes.
Okay. So I marry Atticus Finch.
Of course.
Oh my God. Okay. And I kill Jay Gatsby and I have a consensual sexual experience with Sherlock Holmes.
Is it weird that that's my answer as well?
Well, I don't know. You tell me your reasoning. I'll tell you mine, and then we'll find out.
I mean, just of the three, Atticus Finch is not only, I think, a good man, but is, well read and, I think you could have great conversations and debates and it's just such, so community minded. That was my thing, yeah. Right? I want to be with someone who cares about their community and wants to work, for them. I mean, hey, Jay Gatsby is just like kind of an entitled poser from my perspective.
Yeah, totally.
Just, 100%. You know,
yep.
Were he here now, he'd probably have his collar popped and I'm just not interested in that. And then I think Sherlock Holmes would be, always trying to demonstrate to me that he's smarter than me.
Uh-huh.
And so while I think we could have a fun back and forth in a short term uh-huh. way, long term, uh-huh. just like, I'm not interested in either demonstrating my intellect to you or like saying, good job, you know?
Yeah. It would be exhausting being in the long term relationship with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
But I think, I think he could intuit exactly what I'd want.
Oh, hey. Excellent. Again, Mom and Dad, thanks so much for helping to sponsor this show. So please find us on Twitter and tell us your reasoning for your relationships with these three, or add in some others. I'm happy to play classic fiction, Mary Smushkill. So totally. Thank you, Tobin. I feel like you won both aspects of that game.
Oh, that was a great game. Thank you. Worthy of the movie. That was a game worthy of the movie.
Speaking of the movie, now is the time where we decide definitively, is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? And we have so many fearless women involved in this picture. Tobin, where do you land on this one?
No surprise. This is a giant leap forward for women in front of and behind the camera. And the only thing I will add is that I'm really serious, people. Spend some money so this movie makes some money so they make more movies like this. I want to see everything these people make again, and I want them to be able to make a lot of things. So get off your couch, shell out some dough, and let's see some more movies like this. Aislinn, what about you?
Couldn't agree more. I love the representation of identities in this piece. And like I said at the beginning, the way that it's not the butt of a joke or necessarily what the movie is about, other than the movie is about relationships and particularly female friendship. And I love it so much. There are flaws. There's flaws everywhere. But absolutely, I would like to see more from Olivia Wilde. I would like to see more from the writers and certainly more from all the actors in this piece. So yes, please buy it. Watch it. Talk about it. The end.
All right. So next up is a movie that no one needs to put any more money toward. it's already made plenty. We are going to talk about The Hunger Games in 2 weeks on July 23rd. So come back and check it out. Watch The Hunger Games if you haven't. Or read it if you haven't. And we'll have a thorough discussion later on this
month. Yes. And will we survive the game itself? Who knows?
Who can say? Aislinn, yes. You have another podcast.
I do. It's called Why Aren't We All? ? And I talk to folks who have a practice, a belief, a way of life that makes the world a little bit easier for them to deal with, and that we hypothesize what it might look like if everyone picked up that practice or belief and how the world might change a little bit. There's a whole variety of things that we've talked about, from enjoying beer to playing bridge. And this, the most current episode is about running, particularly running for charity. A great episode with our good friend, Shelley Clark. So please, check it out and, tell us what you think.
I look forward to when you're done with your first run, the first season of the show, to mm-hmm. talk about the similarities that you've, like, what are there common threads between all these disparate things
sure.
that you've, you know, like, it's going to be an interesting to look at the data once you're through.
We have one more official episode and then one potential bonus episode left. So the series wow. is coming to a close. Like British television, we're keeping it short and sweet. So yeah. Also, excellent. I'm on Twitter, but only go. Because I have to be. And I'm at SassyNerdMT, doing my best to contribute as little as possible while still remaining relevant. Tobin, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, and you can find us on Twitter at Contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who've joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn and Jeff Addington. Mm-hmm. Become a member today, connect with other listeners, and support our show.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Aislinn Addington.
I am Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
Okay. Do you like it when I drink coffee?
Well, do I like it when you drink coffee?
Sorry, you didn't hear my joke. Yeah, while we're recording, and then I slurped it. Sorry. Okay, I'm done. Go. Oh.
Sorry, yes. No, I was okay.
If you think I've messed one up, go ahead and take a sip. What happened? Tobin?
No, nothing. Yes?
No, someone broke in and said something.
Not on my end.
Okay. I apologize. There are ghosts.
Someone broke in. is someone whispering spoke. Behind you?
No, not whispering, but out loud. But I did hear someone whispering in my ear the other night. And so they're honestly ghosts in my life. So apologies.
Maybe your dog speaks English.
God, that's the dream.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be.
You have such things to say.
So many things. He'd be so disappointed in me, as are you. So now I'm going to follow the direction.
Okay.
Director, Olivia Wilde.
Oh, wait, I lost my ding. Hang on. Okay, I'm so sorry. Can we just start that again?
Absolutely.